It is a beautiful Monday morning.
That's not a good start, is it, Jordan?
No.
Let's say it like this.
Try and apply that theory to any other industry in the world.
It's a scam.
I was betting like 70, 80K.
This is the Trademate Sports Betting Podcast, helping you beat the bookmakers.
G'day everyone, welcome to episode 93 of the Trademate Sports Betting Podcast, a betting preview of UFC 260, headlined by the rematch of Stipe Miocic versus Francis Ngannou. Today I'm joined by both ex-MMA fighter, smart sports trader, and professional sports bettor, Jonas Hjelstad. How are we, fellas?
Good.
I was quite excited by the intro because it sounded like I was an ex-MMA fighter and I was ready to play that card. Yeah. Just to go in the ring and, you know, choke us that little.
I did think he said that as well. I thought he said like two ex-MMA fighters and I was going to think, all right, yeah. That's interesting.
Sounded good.
It's not even legal in Norway, is it, MMA?
Well, I don't live in Norway.
Yeah, I mean, well, I mean, whatever, mate. I'm just trying to have a bit of fun, you know?
Yeah, it's, but I don't think it is. Well, it's not legal to compete, but it's legal to train. So there is UFC gyms, or not UFC, MMA gyms. And, but they have to come to go to England to fight in like Cage Warriors. And we have, I think we have two like UFC fighters in Emil Meek and Jack.
Jack the Joker.
There used to be a guy a long time ago as well called, like, was he called Einemo or something? Do you remember him? He fought in Pride. He was like a heavyweight fighter. It's going back a long time.
Yeah, before I started watching UFC.
Yeah. But I mean, he, I don't know where he trained, but yeah.
Gustafsson's Norwegian, isn't he, Jonas?
It's not. The Mauler.
You didn't fall for it, mate. You didn't fall for it. Well done. On the weekend, how did we go, fellas? How did you go, Jonas? Because we didn't talk to you beforehand.
In the weekend, I started off strong and then ended really, really bad. So I had who did I have? I had basically every fighter that lost the last five or six games, except the last game. There I had what's his name again?
Brunson.
And I decided, like, look, Holland looks dangerous after the first round. If he just cannot be taken down, he's going to knock the fuck out of Brunson. So I swapped side, and yeah, that didn't work out too well either. So,
well, the live betting market on that was insane. Did you guys notice that as soon as Holland would, like, if the fight was ever on the feet, if Holland, like, looked half decent, the market would just flip on its head. And so what I noticed this after like a couple of rounds. So then I tried to wait for Holland in like the fourth or the fifth to like get like a slight, you know, advantage on the flight. Like, looks like maybe you got him slightly rocked or something, and wait for the market to flip because he'd always get too excited, I guess, and then get too close and then get taken down. And I think it was the fifth round and he's like slightly clipped Brunson, had a little bit of success, or maybe it was the fourth. And his odds just shot up to like three, like you could back Brunson for three in odds and he was barely rocked. And I went to quickly do it. And yeah, by the time I got there, I was too slow. So it's just like, it's crazy how like, because we obviously see it in the grappling, like if someone gets taken down, the market gets flipped. But I haven't seen it like that crazy on the feet before. It's quite interesting.
Yeah. Was it Giannis who knocked out Lopez with like the last second or something like that? Or was that, which fight was that again?
The Dawson fight?
Dawson yeah. Santos? I was in big on Santos for that game, I remember. And I felt like there was some slight equity on the decision, even though it would be maybe a little bit of a robbery, but
Went inside the distance. I thought he looked okay. He still was pretty sharp for a 41-year-old.
The only fight that I won was on Trevin Giles pre, and I bet him after the first round, and that also seemed to be somewhat close, but I feel like it was fair to give Giles the fight. But But it's some weird scoring in the UFC, and you never know with the refs. And you've seen, was it last, not this card, but the previous card, it was a couple I was like, you know, down to like 7 or 10 in also best pair after the fight was over and won the fight. And it's very random because you see some judges, they really score takedown and having a ground control, whereas others, they score damage done. So if you land some powerful punches and get taken down, but they do fuck all from the top position, they still give the round to the others, which I think is fair. I mean, it's not like you're bullying your 3-year-old little brother being 10-year-old yourself and just sitting on top of him. If you have a blue eye and blood coming out of your mouth and nose, I think the little one actually won.
Yeah, I think they're supposed to look at damage a bit more now, aren't they, rather than just like cage control. I think damage is supposed to be, I mean, that's like the major thing that they consider now. So it does make sense if you're not really doing much, like you're pushing some guy up against the cage, or, you know, you land a takedown and do nothing. If somebody lands some damaging shots, I think that's a good way to look at it.
Yeah, and I've also been sorry.
No, you go, mate.
I've been surprised to see like the lack of determination from so many players. Like they're down 2 rounds going into third. They don't really seem to know it. Like they need to, for example, if they get the other guy wobbled in the third round, they go to the ground and they try to submit him, or instead of just saying bring the fight to the feet and you're gonna knock him out. Like there's so much of this that's going on. You see, some corners are actually really good with it. But there's so many that doesn't really seem to understand this. Like that your equity on the feet when the other guy is wobbled and gassed compared to your striker, just bringing him up is just going to give you such an advantage. But like I think that was Giles also who decided to go for some stupid shit on the ground and ended up at the bottom. And it's just like you have the fight, but that was 1-1 in rounds. But he would have just dominated him by standing. And it was just so stupid.
I think it's just like the chaotic nature of fighting. It's, I think with some fighters, it's just really hard to kind of, you know, make those decisions. Some of them, a lot of them are just fighting on autopilot. So I think that's why they do sometimes stuff that seems like kind of like counterintuitive. But I think that's just like fighting in general, I think.
Yeah. Oh, well. I'm not a fighter myself, and it's like playing FIFA. It's a lot easier than when you're on the field yourself and playing. You see everything, and it all makes sense. Just cross it over, make a run, and you're free.
Yeah. Ryan, you did pretty well on the weekend, mate. That silver one was the good one, actually. That closed massively and won. And, I mean, Santos inside the distance closed well too. I think that got into like 4 at a lot of bookies that I was looking at. The Maze one voided. So you had a pretty good. If you're looking at CLV, you had an absolute cracker. I didn't. I only really had one bet on the Holland to win inside the distance, but that didn't win. But oh well, life goes on. I'm honestly, my best bets of the weekend have been going absolutely shit lately. If anyone out there, I feel sorry for you if anyone's been following them. I mean, the Holland run was actually not too bad. I think a lot of bookies had them at like 180 or 190. I think as it was getting closer to closing, but I got
to win inside the distance. Yeah,
I got 225.
Well, quite a bit short.
Yeah, so it was a decent bet, but I mean. Yeah, my luck's been fucking shit lately, but oh well.
But imagine like Holland being more professional and understanding different things about fighting. Like he would have won this fight so easily, but
all he had to do was just keep the distance and, you know, try and stay away. He just rushed in every time he had him rocked, just rushed in. Didn't need to.
Yeah,
I liked it when he was throwing like hammer fists. So when Brunson had like his leg up, and Holland was just like raining down hammer fists with his huge arms. It was pretty ridiculous because there's not many guys that can do that, is there?
He has to be the most entertaining fighter. Like,
yeah, he's a good guy to watch.
He beats everyone.
I think he probably gained a lot of entertainment points and value by fans in this fight, even though he put on a poor performance, in my opinion. But in terms of getting the W, he didn't do what he should have done. But at the same time, it's going to be a fan favorite going forward, and it's going to be they're going to be selling more PPV cards, 9 points. What's it called? PPV views.
Yeah, pay per view. Yeah.
So
he's talking about going down to 170 apparently as well. He's he always weighs in a bit under, doesn't he? He weighs in at like 183, 182. So he's talking about getting with like a nutritionist and trying to get to 170. So that would be pretty interesting.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't be fighting against him in that class. But yeah, there's some interesting fights for the weekend.
Yes,
do you know much about? Yeah. So one fighter that's always interesting, and that's starting in, I don't know if that just came out, but Alonso Menifield is fighting a guy called Fabio Cerant.
Yeah, they've just, Menifield was supposed to fight against William Knight, but they've cancelled that for COVID, so this is the rearranged fight now. So.
Yeah, well, I haven't, have you watched any of his fights, the Fabio guy?
Oh, no, I don't know anything yet. I only found out like an hour ago that the Menifield fight had been cancelled. So, yeah, I've not had time to look at that one yet.
Yeah, no, but what I was going to say about like a fighter like Menifield is he's always he's so dangerous in the first round, but he's looked kind of shit in the second and third round. So I don't know much about the Fabio guy. I guess you can easily see after the first round, but I wouldn't be betting on his pre-fight, but when it goes in play, it could be interesting. Another fight in the pre-cards that I also can touch upon is the Mudastas Bakauskas. I remember he was fighting, who was he fighting? Two fights ago. He was fighting Andras Michalidis. And Andras Michalidis, he opened at like 3.5 or 3.25 against Bakauskas, and when the fight started, they were both under evens. So I don't know, like Bakauskas still won the fight, but that's just a huge sign that either something was wrong with his camp that time, or the bookies are just massively overvaluing Bakauskas. Difficult name to pronounce.
It is, yeah. I've not looked. This is a fight I've not looked too much into, to be honest. Like, from speaking to a few other people, they seem to think there could be some value in Bakauskas and the other guy, but I'm not going to try and pronounce his name, actually. but for me, it's one that I've not dug into too much, this one. It's one I've kind of going to leave that one till later in the week, I think.
Yeah. Sorry, I just went a bit off track there. I just was a bit shocked to see he's got a new fight at Manifield.
No, that's all right, mate. All right, well, we'll try and get a little bit more format to the show, mate. So how about we go back to the quiz question for the week, mate? And normally what happens here, Jonas, is we say the quiz question and then we answer it at the end if you forgot the format. So the quiz question is, what is the combined fight time for Francis Ngannou's last four fights? Is it, well, roughly... Is it 1.5 minutes? Is it 2 minutes? Is it 2.5 minutes? Or is it 3 minutes? So there are your four options, and we can get to that at the end of the show. But today we are going to cover the top three fights on the main card, heavyweight title fight between Stipe Miocic and Francis Ngannou, Tyrone Woodley and Vicente Luque, and Sean O'Malley versus Thomas Almeida. In depth, giving you all the value picks you want and you need. But the big question is, what else is taking our fancy outside of these fights? Ryan, mate, you have one fight that you want to have a look at. I'm not going to try pronounce these guys' names.
Yeah, so the fight I'm looking at is Marc-Andre Barriot versus Azaitar. So there's two Azaitars in the UFC. There's Abu Azaitar and there's Otman Azaitar, so the brothers. And in this fight, I think it's the older brother who's fighting. So I quite like Barrio in this fight. The guy, he came into the UFC with three losses. Well, he came into the UFC and lost three fights in a row, which is never great. And then his last fight, he won by KO. But that was turned into a no contest because he tested positive for a banned substance. So that's not great. But the guy's fought some some pretty good talent in the UFC. He fought Andrew Sanchez, who's decent. He had a split decision loss against Jocko, who's a very good fighter as well. And overall, I just like his game. He's very well-rounded. He's big and strong. He's the taller fighter. He's good in the clinch. He's got decent power in his hands overall. He's got nice straight combination punching. The guy's durable, and he's never been finished. So these are all good signs for me against a guy like Azaitar. So Azaitar, he won his debut against Miranda, Vitor Miranda. And he's kind of like he's 35 years old, but he's quite stocky. He's a compact power puncher. But with every strike, he seems to throw like maximum effort. So he throws these massive hooks, and when he throws a kick, it's like everything is like to the extreme, basically. And that type of style, you know, it's obviously as you get older as well. I mean, the guy's no spring chicken. He's 35 now. It's hard to kind of maintain that over three rounds. And I just think unless he gets Barrio out of there quite quickly with his big power, then he's going to be in trouble. So, yeah, I really like Barrio in this fight. I think he's pretty decent value. The best I saw currently was 1.84, and I still think that's pretty good value. I'd take him down to about 1.75.
Oh, nice. Yeah, you can get 1.83 at Betway. I think when you messaged us about this earlier in the week, I think I got 187 or 190 maybe. So he's already coming quite.
Yeah, I got 191 with William Hill. They were kind of lagging a little bit, but yeah, I'd still take that now. I think it's still a good price. I quite like this matchup for him.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Jonas, mate. I don't know if you have any things that you'd like to go through, but maybe you want to talk a little bit about some live betting opportunities.
Well, live betting is more like a punt because you gotta. Like in the moment, you have basically 1 minute to bet in between the rounds where I'm betting. But if you have access to soft accounts, there's so many good opportunities. You can see some bookmakers, they are offering props, they're offering stuff in the round. So it's so easy to see, for example, as soon as somebody gets their leg fucked or anything like that, you basically have 10, 20 seconds to get on and bet, and you can. You can see if you look at Betfair, for example. Betfair could be have a guy at 3.5. Something happens to the leg. It goes down to 3, 2.5, 2, 1.7. And still some of the other bookmakers could be lagging and be like 3 or 2.75 or something when Betfair is down. So it's difficult if you're watching on stream because then you're going to be too much behind. So you're either going to spoil yourself with what is happening or you're going to be too slow. But in between the rounds, you always gotta. What I do is I follow a couple of guys on Twitter. I see their scoring to see if they match mine. That usually comes like 15 to 30 seconds into the break between the rounds. So then, if you're unsure about the scoring, you can wait. But then also the price might change a lot. But you gotta figure out like what happened. How did I look towards the end? How it's they gonna like you, for example, if you have which fight was that? Was that a fight this weekend or was it the previous weekend? That was basically a 1-1 in rounds. It was clear. One fighter won the first round, the other guy dominated the second round. But you see, like, there's just one chance to victory, and that is to get an early takedown and be on top and dominate from the top. And they still had that price at like 6 or 7. Didn't get a takedown, but still to see like those kind of prices available just because of a poor second round when they didn't look as they weren't injured. So it's a lot of good opportunities where you have like a big favorite losing the first round, winning the second, and everyone just thinks, oh yeah, he looks so much better. But there's still like a good path to victory for the underdog. So looking at those things, I think it's a good strategy at least. But again, in UFC, you have 10, 15 fights a week. These opportunities doesn't come by often. And I guess you just got to try to trust your instincts. And at least to me, it's more fun because it's more of my own analysis compared to analyzing markets, seeing how odds changes, a lot of other things.
Because I think commentary bias is big as well, isn't it? Like, I don't know if you take that into account too much, but you know, if you listen to the commentary, like especially like a lot of people are saying in the Blachowicz versus Izzy fight, you know, they were talking about the commentary bias and that, and I don't know if that affected the odds, because that wasn't, I didn't stay up for that event, so I wasn't watching the live odds for that. But I know that in previous fights, sometimes like Joe Rogan especially, he likes to just take a narrative and then just run with it throughout the whole fight, basically without really paying too much attention to what's going on. And I think that does affect the odds sometimes. So like, I think that's something to kind of look out for as well.
Yeah. What the commentators are saying is, in the beginning of this lockdown, because there was no audience, I felt like also the judges were a bit biased towards them. So if somebody said, oh, it's a clear 2-0, oh, he needs a knockout, very often that was reflected on the scorecards too, because I do feel a lot of these judges are incapable of scoring properly, which also Dana White went out and said after the Blachowicz fight. I agree that I think it was fair that Blachowicz won, but the scoring, it wasn't that clear.
No, it's way off that scoring. They weren't 10-8 rounds at all. Like just landing a takedown and like a few shots. That shouldn't be a 10-8 round, should it really? I mean, it's never really has been before. It was very odd though.
I mean, I think the best advice is try to block out what their commentaries are saying and see like what is actually happening. How close are the scores? Like, we got this like counters to count like significant strikes and other things, tap a bit more times if it's more powerful, and try to keep your own score of things. It's just a fun exercise to do while watching and to see that if you can agree and see if a round is closer than what you think it is. But it's difficult if you combine it with alcohol.
Yeah.
who do you follow on Twitter, Jonas, for scoring?
I think the most accurate guy is a guy called Ryan Frederick.
Yeah, okay.
So I reached out to him for one thing, because I think a lot of people disagree with me, and he did. But the eye poke for Belal, I mean, he did one in the first round. He did a bad one in the second round. Yeah, I understand that these things can happen, but you see it so often happening with the same people over and over and over. And there's no excuse to go in like that. And yeah, your fingers can go up, but if you go out with like fingers like this towards the eye, it's gonna happen. And I think it should be stronger. It shouldn't just be like, oh, minus 1 point or anything like that. For an eye poke, as bad as what happened there, yeah, it's unlucky, but I'd still think it should be a disqualification.
But yeah, I agree, actually. I do agree, and I think that'd stop people doing it as much as well, really. Because like you said, it's not a natural movement. Like obviously, you can try and palm a jab to counter or whatever, but sticking your hand out like that, it's not something that you naturally do, is it really?
No.
So I would agree.
Yeah. So I reached out and I said like, if it should, and he was like, if I said, can you argue for a disqualification there? And he was like, no, that was unintentional. There's zero chance. There's like a point deduction at max. But if you get your eye, especially in a 5-round fight, if you get 2 eye pokes in the first 5.5 minutes, it's going to be worth more than a point for a fight that's likely to go the distance, right? Because you're going to be so much more accurate on your shots if a guy can barely see from one eye. So
yeah,
I
completely
know.
Agree. Yeah.
So I feel like if it's unintentional, even though it's unintentional, I think like the first one should be point deduction, if it's like a clear one and they can see that on the replay, if it pokes the eye. Second, I think it's just a DQ. And I think a lot of people disagree. and then you have the other things like the no contest and stuff like that for... Who was that who did the knee the week after Jan?
Was it Eric Anders?
Yeah. So he had basically won the fight. There was zero chance. And I mean, the knee, it hit the arm, which it went into that. It was not hard at all. He was fucked long before. So to score that in no contest, sure, I can see it. I think it's so hard to come up with this because, like, Peter Yan also, he had already won the fight, but that was a brutal knee, which is fair to be a DQ. But the other one, it's so thin because the power he had in his knees was like a jab, pretty much. But he was so fucked from the start. So just to be able to do that just shows, like, oh, that tilted the shit out of me because I was on Andres. And but that's, like, in my opinion, yeah, he shouldn't have done it. He knows he shouldn't have done this. But he had won the fight already. But regardless if I bet him or not, I do think he should have been DQ'd because the rules are clear. And I'd like to see more DQs. Even though it can be a lot of arguments whether how strong it was or all of these things, the rules are so clear. Got to follow them. So to give a non-contest, I think it's wrong.
Commissioner Jonas, eh?
Well, and yeah.
Well, you can be head of the Norwegian Commission, mate, when it becomes legal.
If it ever becomes legal, but I think the biggest. And I reached out to Joe Rogan once. I said that about the scoring. Like, I think each round should be scored by all three judges. So if you have two judges scoring, you know, round one for Alex, then you have two judges scoring round two for Alex, and all three judges scoring round three for Ryan. Well, because it was different judges who scored different rounds in favor for Alex, you can win the fight because it's two reps can be 29-28 in favor of Ryan because of round one and two. But
yeah, okay.
I do think it's better to score it round by round than to say, like, individual referees are like deciding who's going to win.
Did Joe get back to you, mate?
Nah.
Always thought that bloke was an asshole.
I was waiting for, like, the invitation to get on his podcast, you know, bring some cigar, whiskey, get it going.
Hey, he had Ike Haxton on his podcast, so, you know, you might have a shot.
Yeah, but Ike Haxton is known because he is Mr. Hollywood. Ike Hollywood Haxton. So I'm not up there yet.
Oh, well, one day, mate, you'll get there. Maybe one of your videos on YouTube has got two more views than one of his podcasts, and you can just show him that. Send it to him.
If only the owners of Spotify were Norwegian.
So have you got anything you want to go through in the card, mate, or did you just want to talk about live betting and scoring with Joe Rogan?
I do remember in the previous fight with, Robertson versus Miranda, did the fancy Maverick. But I don't know. The prices looks similar. I do think it could be value in Maverick. Who knows? I just basically stopped betting on female fighters because I feel it's so unpredictable what's going to happen. And it might sound sexist, but you see so much stuff going on which you think is too low level. Like, for example, how often do you see an arm bar being pulled off or a triangle from the bottom with men? Because I feel like they are much better to defend these things. And it's good to take into account. And I think it also favors underdogs who is flexible and can fight from the back. But what's that Brazilian girl's name? Was won, like, basically all of her fights by armbar. She fought, like, a month ago or something. I think she won with another armbar again. But you have all this, like, I tend to just stay away from them in pre-fight or just bet small on wherever movements is going towards the fight or something like that. See? But yeah. I think, not too much.
Cool. All right. Well, why don't we just kick it off and talk about Sean O'Malley and Thomas Almeida. Almeida actually hasn't won a fight since 2016, which is very, very surprising. I remember back in the day when he fought Cody Garbrandt, and that was like the clash of the next big things, but he lost that, and I think he won his, I think he might have won his next fight after that, and then, but he hasn't won since then, since 2016. O'Malley coming off his first ever loss against Marlon Vera, or apparently, if you ask O'Malley, he didn't lose or something like that. I haven't heard the interview. I haven't heard the interview yet. But yeah, apparently he said some weird shit there. Yeah, what do we think about this one, Ryan? Do you think Almeida could exploit O'Malley's bony legs?
Possibly. I mean, like you say, there was a time when Almeida was kind of seen as this, you know, the next big thing. He was undefeated until he ran into Garbrandt, and he was finishing guys as well. So he's got, I mean, in his last fight, he looked a bit rusty and a bit flat to me. He was, I don't know, his timing looked a little bit off. He wasn't able to close the distance too well. And Martinez was able to kind of dictate that fight and fight from range. And yeah, Almeida just didn't look good, but like, I have a general kind of dislike for O'Malley. Like, personally, he seems like a bit of a dick. So maybe that gives a, you know, maybe that makes me a little bit biased sometimes in look, like trying to oppose him. Because the guy
said something
does
about Megan Anderson or something, didn't he? Like a couple of weeks
ago. Yeah, on his podcast. And he was on about trying heroin or something as well, wasn't he? Like, yeah, saying that he could try heroin and then get off it or whatever. So I don't know. But the guy, there's a question mark over his mentality. He does seem like a bit of a nutcase, but he does have very good striking. He's very unorthodox. He uses his range really well. So that kind of, I do want to oppose him, but Almeida's not really the guy that I want. You know, I'd like to face him. Like, you want a guy with a bit more durability. Like, Almeida's been finished a few times. Rob Font finished him. Like I said, Cody Garbrandt finished him. And then he just looked pretty flat in his last fight, but I mean, his odds are pretty good. They're getting up there. I think I saw 3.7 on the Betfair Exchange earlier today. So if those odds keep climbing and it gets, you know, 3.8, 3.9, gets close to that 4 range, then I'll probably take a bet. The only other thing I looked at was Almeida to win inside the distance at 5.5, because he does have finishing ability. You know, the guy, he was previously quite explosive, although in his last fight, he didn't look like he had that. He does have a decent leg kicking game, which we've seen people use against O'Malley before, and O'Malley's had trouble with his legs. So, you know, that 5.5, I think there's a little bit of value there. So that might be something that I take, but I've not taken it yet.
I haven't seen much of, I mean, what's his name? Almeida lately. Almeida. But what I saw you could get O'Malley by KO, as you can see on my screen here, 2.4, 2.5. Like, I thought it would be a lot shorter than that. Or am I going insane?
Is it 2.5, yeah?
Yeah, 2.5. Sorry, mate.
That's not a bad price, I think. Like O'Malley's got decent hands, and, you know, he does fight from range really well. And one thing that Almeida struggled against Martinez was to close the distance. And he seemed, I don't know, fairly content to kind of get picked off and lose that fight. So that's a troubling sign for me when a guy's had like a long layoff and then he's come back and then he's fought like that. So unless he's made some big improvements or it was just kind of ring rust, then I do think O'Malley will probably have too much for him. But then O'Malley's coming off a leg injury as well. So perhaps he might have a little bit of ring rust as well. So, I mean, I've not looked at fight to end inside the distance, but I imagine that's, I don't know.
183. Or you can get 183 for O'Malley to win by KO or sub. And I looked at that yesterday, and inside the distance, or for the fight not to finish, was 1.5. I can get that up on my screen. Yeah, Jonas, what do you reckon?
So, like what you said, Sean O'Malley is a very unorthodox person. He says whatever he thinks, he does whatever he wants. For him to try to make a point here, I think is very likely. I'm not sure if UFC also picked a fight which is favorable for him in terms of matchup, because he is kind of one of the next Conor McGregors, right?
Yeah,
he's entertaining, he is powerful, he knocks people out. The striking accuracy is huge. Most of his fights has been first round finishes from what I remember, and nobody's really been able to take his power in the division. If Almeida doesn't have that big of a chin, I think also Sean O'Malley just wants to prove a point that he is the real deal and could go for an early finish. I'm not sure which is more tempting to bet him in round one. I see a couple have him at four. I don't know if you can get higher somewhere.
Yeah, you get 3.75. I might be losing my mind here, but I felt like I saw something. Oh, no, I'm thinking of the Woodley fight, sorry, of KO and round one. But, yeah, I don't know. I like I said, I haven't watched much of Almeida lately, but I've seen, you know, he's been knocked out quite a few times. And we know how good O'Malley is on the feet. So I was very, very surprised to see that you could get as high as 2.5 for him for a KO.
Yeah.
Yeah, that seems decent to me, actually. 2.5, I think that's probably a little bit of value there.
Well, I mean, the thing is like, it's Sean O'Malley. He's like, you know, your quintessential guy who you're never going to really find value on. So that's why I saw that and I was just like very, very surprised because normally, you know, you find Conor McGregor KO, there's never really any value in that. But looking at that, I thought that was a bit higher than I expected. So, yeah, I don't know. Could be a little bit there. Anything else you guys want to say about that one? Like, do you give, like, how can Almeida win this fight, do we think? Do you think we can take him down, maybe?
Yeah, I think he's going to have to kind of get in close. I don't think he can fight at range because I just don't think he closes the distance well enough to kind of fight that way. And if Martinez kind of outstruck him then at distance, then I don't think that O'Malley's going to have too much trouble doing that. I mean, if he just attacks the legs, you know, that's probably his best route to victory is to kind of attack the legs and maybe look to clinch O'Malley up. But he's never really been a guy that's, you know, look to kind of clinch guys up and implement a grappling game. So that'll be something new out of him. I think he will probably just try and counter and throw leg kicks. So it's kind of a stay away from a fight for me because, like you say about O'Malley, generally he's going to be a guy that you're not going to find much value on. But then I don't think Almeida's the guy that's really going to cause him too much trouble. Like Jonas said, I think the UFC have found a good opponent for him in this fight.
Yeah, I agree with what Jonas said too about how he might be looking to come out and make a big statement too because, yeah, there was so much hype around him and he basically got shit on by a lot of people.
I see PokerStars has 4 on him in first round. I don't know if it's – I think probably I favor 4 instead of 2.5 for in first round. But, again, probably not going to be too much value. Probably will put on a small entertaining bet and see the fight.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, well, from a live betting perspective, perhaps you could just look early on and see if Almeida is. You know, if he gets 2 or 3 leg kicks off early on, you know, that might be something to jump on. So,
yeah.
That's a plan.
I think if, regardless if also, well, it's one very big difference though. Like, if you look at this division, they're not going to gas out. Nobody in this division gasses out. Because what you see in heavyweights is like some guy could be throwing so many punches in the first round and you're just like, oh yeah, he crushed him. He's so much better. His output is so much higher. But the other guy is just pacing himself better. And then you can bet him in the first break and after the first round. And you can get like 4, 5, 6 sometimes. And you see it's just going to decline. Probably start strong in the first minute and then be dominated. And then you're going to have like a great odds going into a third round. So, but for this division, I think, like I said, if you get a couple of leg kicks, I don't know how much of a chin O'Malley has and if Almeida is the guy who can knock him out. I don't know. But he can probably fuck up his leg. And I guess that's also the big question is how durable is his leg going to be now?
Yeah. No, it should be a good fight. It'll be entertaining nonetheless. And, yeah, let's move on. Tyron Woodley versus Vicente Luque. I think this is a really fascinating betting market at the moment. I'm quite surprised at how short some of the bookies have got Vicente Luque at, but you can get him at 1.4-ish. Yeah, just about everywhere. And Tyron as high as 3.1 on a couple of bookies there. Woodley... massive fall from grace ever since losing the title in 2019 with losses to Covington and Burns since. Luque, probably one of the most entertaining fighters on the roster, but has failed when he gets to the top 10 opponents. He's got losses to both, I think decision losses to both Leon Edwards and Wonderboy. Do we think Luque is maybe too heavy of a favorite here?
It's a tough one for me. It's like the question is how far has kind of Woodley dropped off, or is it just the fact that Woodley's been fighting like elite level competition and guys that can stifle his wrestling? So that's the big question mark for me, because you think that Woodley would have a wrestling advantage in this fight, and he's still going to have power. You know, he's getting up there in age, he's 38. He's going to lose, you know, he's lost a bit of that explosion, but the guy can still hit very hard. And Luque has generally been quite hittable in fights as well. Like, he, you know, he's been through a lot of wars. Like, he had that war with Mike Perry, which was back and forth. So, you know, it's not like he's some kind of, you know, he's not like a defensive genius, or he's not a super elusive fighter who's kind of going to be in and out. And he's also not a guy that's going to be able to clinch Woodley up and be able to, you know, have... be able to hold him against the cage. He's not going to be able to implement what Usman did. Burns obviously is like an elite level grappler, so he had that. And then Colby as well, he's a very good wrestler, so all of those guys were kind of ideal, I suppose, to stifle Woodley's style, while Luque I think will struggle a little bit more. So I mean, for me, it's just like, can I back Woodley now or not? Like, he's just looked really kind of flat in his last few fights. It's but I think possibly, you know, you could roll the dice one more time. You know, you're getting, well, you're getting pretty good odds. And then,
it's,
you know,
been if, so if weird. Should... It's been so weird watching him. It's almost like the way I looked at it was that he looks scared to put any output out that he's just going to gas or something like that. Like, it was, he's just not pulling the trigger. It's very, very odd. And the good thing about this fight for him is it's three rounds. So if that was the case and he's just so worried about his gas tank, like, you know, three rounds. I mean, I know Vicente Luque will, you know, push the pace and make it a crazy three rounds, but maybe he'll be willing to pull the trigger a bit more.
I mean, you'd hope so. I mean, his last good performance was against Darren Till, wasn't it? You know, and that was in a similar vein. You had like an upcoming guy that was a very good striker, and then I think Woodley clipped him with a big shot and then dominated him on the ground. So, you know, if Woodley gets on top of you, that's a very strong, you know, he's a very strong guy. And like you say, it's only a three-round fight, so if he can get two takedowns, then I think it's likely that he can, you know, grind out two rounds that way. You know, if he gets 3 minutes of top time in each round, you know, that's a possibility. And then, you know, the guy still hits hard as well, so if you're giving me odds of like 3.1, 3.2, then, I'm probably going to have to take it. I think I'm kind of talking myself into it now, but it's just, you know, I don't know. He's looked so flat that it's hard to put your money on a guy that looks, you know, that, looks that way, isn't it? But,
how much do you want that 3.1?
Well, let's take 100 on it.
I'm joking. No, it's like Woodley, like I said, he has not been the most entertaining fighter to watch recently. He hasn't really been able to dominate the way everyone was expecting him to. And I think it's been on the decline. But often also you see people who's on the decline who are still fighting in the UFC. They very rarely go out without a fight. And they are, like now everyone is expecting Luque to just be the absolutely dominating fighter, which he very easily could be. But the price, I also feel like it's higher than it should be on Woodley. But again, don't really know how they're going to match up stylistically. And I'm just going to wait it out and see.
I think Like, Woodley's going to hit Luque. I think there's, like, absolutely no doubt about that. But Luque's got a pretty good chin. So it's like, I don't know. That's my question. I mean, you can get Woodley by KO at sixes. Like, that to me seems even, like, and I looked at yesterday. I was on Paddy Power, or the equivalent of Paddy Power here. And you could get 12s for Woodley round one KO, which, I mean...
That's like, pretty good, I think. Yeah,
that just seemed a little bit ridiculous to me. I know he's not really pulling the trigger lately. But if there's one fighter that's going to allow him to hit him or be hittable, and if he gets a clean strike away, like, you know, Woodley's one of the most powerful punchers in the world. So
has Luque ever been knocked out?
No, he hasn't. That was the thing I looked up too. He's been submitted a couple times. So that was like the one question that I wanted to talk to you guys about was that, like, can you see Woodley knocking him out? Because if you can slightly see it, then, you know, sixes and 12s for a first round KO, like, it looks a bit nice.
When was he subbed out? Because I can just see all of his fights spin by.
Yeah, it was before the UFC, I'm pretty sure. And Woodley has a good submission game, doesn't he? Like, he's got a pretty decent submission game, and you can get 23 for Woodley to submit him. If you think he can get him down to the ground, like, that could be another avenue too. So, I don't know. Yeah. I think you could just have a few speculative goes at a few props here for Woodley because it all, I don't know, there's nothing like you can be, like, definitive about, but I still think these prices are a bit high.
Yeah, I think in general that's a pretty good strategy. Like, I think we kind of talked about that a while ago when we got on Dichikarico to win by KO. Like, sometimes, kind of when you look at what everybody else is not looking at, that's where the that's where the value is. And I think with this one, like you say, everyone's kind of looking at Woodley as being past it, and maybe he is. But, like, you know, the dude did submit Darren Till after he cracked him. You know, the dude, he wiped out Robbie Lawler. I mean, we are going back a few years now, but, you know, that's two kind of elite-level fighters that he's finished. You know, I think kind of Luke A, probably like a step below these guys. So it's not, you know, it wouldn't be crazy to see Woodley finish him.
Yeah, I mean, have you guys seen Luke A being, you know, rocked at any time or look like he was about to be finished?
Yeah, I mean, he fights through it. He must have, like, one of the best chins.
Yeah.
And I guess also, like, if he's exchanging punches with Woodley, I think he'll come out on top. I think his chin is just so much more durable. And it's not like he got punching power too.
Yeah. I don't know. Do we want to come to any conclusion here, or are we just going to leave it for everyone? Live betting.
Woodley's probably the value side. It's not a bet I've made yet personally, just because I'm just finding it hard to put money on Woodley. But I do think that is the value side. So maybe if you're a Woodley fan, maybe you might want to put some money on him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to wait it out.
Yeah.
See what happens. Like, yeah.
All right. Let's get into main event. Very, very. Another betting market, which is, I think, fascinating too. So, yeah, rematch of the fight from 2018, I believe it was early 2018, which we know Miocic absolutely dominated Ngannou. Ngannou since, well, he lost to Lewis, but then he went on a four-fight win streak with four quick KOs, beating Blades, JDS, Kane, and Rosenstrike. Miocic has only lost one fight since 2014. There's a little stat for you. He lost to Daniel Cormier, which would have also been 2018, I think, and that was, knockout in the first round. So we know how good Miocic has been over the last decade, basically, probably the best ever heavyweight of all time. I'll get the odds up, but most people probably know them. You can get twos for Miocic, or it looks like you can get on the exchanges 208 at Betfair at the moment. Francis Ngannou, you can get as high as 1.83 at a few bookies there. Were you guys surprised about the odds when you saw this one, or is it just your standard kind of market where people just favor the guy who can get a very quick knockout?
Personally, like, I was expecting Ngannou to be priced lower. I mean, so that's usually when I feel like that is happening. The value is usually on the other side. So I don't know, but Ngannou is kind of I think if he is going to win, I think it's very likely to be around one or two. Stipe is just, like I said, one of the best fighters of all time. The problem is, like, I don't think anyone has ever faced the strength that Ngannou holds right now, and he's so explosive. How many rounds would it last for? Well, definitely, I would say the first two rounds. I don't know if Ngannou is going to pace himself, if he's going to, or just go for an early KO and make a statement. I just bet Ngannou to win in round one at 4 with ACR. To me, yeah, I know you're having your quiz question, and with the options, so it's clear that the last 4 fights has last on average less than a minute. I don't know if anyone can ever hold that power, and Ngannou just seemed to be reckless going in, and he's not afraid to exchange blows because he knows his shots is so much more powerful than the other guys. Question is if Miocic is going to be able to just take him down. I think Ngannou, like his story coming from the streets, how he, I don't know if you listened to the podcast, how he got from Nigeria to France, and he is a fighter, and this is what he's been waiting for his whole life. He's going to come prepared. I don't know if he's just going to roll the dice and go for an early finish, or if he's going to try to play more strategically. I think his biggest shot is just to use his power, and nobody's going to be able to take it. I'm like, when I get 4 for him to win in round one, I cannot not take it because of the power is just too strong, I'd say. For live betting, I think potentially if he goes, if he doesn't knock him out, it's going to be changing side unless it's 2-0 in rounds and Ngannou still looks pretty fresh. If he doesn't look fresh, I think it's going to just be down to, yeah, he can still land the knockout in the 5th round even, but it's going to be very unlikely, I'd say, unless Miocic is heavily injured. But that's also one thing that you can see. If he gets heavily injured in first round, he might be up to like 4.556, which is going to be too high because people are just going to overfavor Ngannou, which is what we spoke about. He's going to just decline. I've seen props for people betting in round one, round two. Round three, I think it starts to get just way too off to be betting pre-fight. But my money is going to be on Ngannou to win in round one. And then reconsider after round one.
Your thoughts, Ryan?
Yeah, so I've got quite similar thoughts, really. Like when I was like looking at this fight, obviously I went back and watched the first one. So this second one, you've got to think about, like, has Ngannou made some improvements? And it's kind of hard to see that because his fights have been so short. But he did show, like, when he fought JDS, he showed like a little bit of a more measured approach in that fight. Like, he showed some leg kicks. And then when he was also landing shots, he wasn't just rushing in and trying to like follow them up. So like in the first fight with Miocic, like when he was landing a shot, he was just, you know, running after Miocic and swinging wild. And Miocic just got good movement and he was able to get out of the way. And obviously eventually he just wore him down. So that was like some improvement that I saw, because in the JDS fight, when he was landing a shot, he was actually not just chasing after him, he was kind of resetting and then, you know, like going after him in a more methodical manner. And we've also seen that he's, you know, he's also added a few leg kicks to his game as well, which is quite good. And then if you look at his wrestling improvements, like I watched his second fight with Blaydes and he was able to kind of shrug off a takedown attempt really easily in that fight. So that's also shows some small improvements from, like you say, from the 4 minutes of fight time or whatever you've got to watch. And then also, you know, Miocic has just had 3 really hard fights with Cormier as well, you know, and like the, obviously he got knocked out in one of those, and in the other fights he did take some damage as well. So initially, before I like properly looked into this fight, I thought the value was probably on Miocic, but then kind of the more I thought about it and the more that I've looked at it, I kind of favor Ngannou a little bit more. And like my plan that I wrote down was kind of similar to Jonas's, and that was just to back Ngannou before the fight and then just exit the bet after round one, because like you say, the likelihood of him knocking out Miocic in round one is fairly high. Like the likelihood of Miocic knocking out Ngannou in round one is fairly low, and I'd say like 70% of the time Ngannou is going to win round one. And I don't think his odds are going to, like, you know, if he wins the round, I don't think his odds are going to drop massively either. So I think that's just a really good strategy. And I think that round one KO prop as well is good, because obviously Ngannou seems like he can knock any man on the planet out in, you know, in a few minutes. So I think those are both good bets.
Very, very interesting. I was going to ask who you guys think has improved the most since 2018. Because I listened to Daniel Cormier talk about who he thought had improved the most, and he actually thought Stipe had improved the most since then. which, I mean, it's hard to say because Ngannou, like, literally doesn't fight for more than 30 seconds, but Stipe's been able to show a lot of improvement just throughout those Cormier fights. But what do you guys think on that? Do you see, like, that Ngannou's improved out of sight, would you say, since that last fight?
I mean, it's tough to say how much he's improved. Like I say, I've seen improvements, but you're not getting a lot of fight time to see them. So, like, how does he look in round two, round three? Like, we don't know. Like, Miocic is a lot more. He moves a lot quicker. He seems to have dropped a bit of weight. He seems like a lot better on his feet now, and his boxing's always been very good. And obviously, he's got really good body shots, as we saw in the Cormier fights as well. And his wrestling's very good as well for the heavyweights. But it's tough to say. I mean, both fighters have obviously improved. But then, you know, you could say that perhaps those three kind of tough fights he's had with Cormier are going to affect his durability. That could be a factor. Whereas Ngannou's took basically no damage at all since their first fight. So I could see why you would like back either side, really, but like I say, I just like that, you know, back Ngannou at the start of the fight and just get out after round one, because you're probably going to get out for a little profit if he doesn't knock him out, and then there's the massive upside of him, you know, knocking Stipe out. So,
all right, I also thought it was interesting that you get Stipe by decision at like 5.5. considering that's the exact same way that the fight went last time. Do you guys see any value there at all?
Yeah, I think there's some value there. Obviously, Ngannou showed how tough he was in the first fight because he looked completely gassed after like two rounds, and he managed to survive a five-round beating, really. So you'd think the guy's been working on his cardio in preparation for that, knowing how the first fight went. So like you say, if he's in better condition, then it seems likely they'll be able to do it again.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, also betting someone to win a decision fighting against Ngannou is not somebody a lot of punters is going to be willing to do. If they're going to watch the fight, they're going to be holding their breath for 25 minutes. So yeah, there's usually like value in those things, I feel. But yeah, it's Ngannou. But who knows? Like, it's both of them have prepared themselves for this fight now. Both of them have improved dramatically, and the only thing is, like, how can you prepare yourself for the power that Ngannou possesses?
Yeah,
like you try to take him down, you hold his leg, and he elbows you, and you're out. Like, it's. I really don't get it. I don't see Stipe being priced that low. Of course, I might be biased and I'm a super Ngannou fan, but I just, like I said, exactly with what Ryan said, like after round two, if Ngannou hasn't finished him, as long as he can walk to his corner after round two, I think it's very likely that he will be a big favorite to win the next rounds, and probably if you can bet him to win by decision, is going to be a good bet after round two if you have access to any books that offers that. But it all depends how the fight goes. Also, who knows, maybe Stipe gets him down in the first round and Ngannou just has to kind of pace himself and then try to go for a knockout in round two. Maybe he'll pace himself also in round two and try to get a win by points. Like, it's impossible to say, but I just think those first five shots can be enough to knock anyone out, regardless of who you are.
Yeah.
And if he also throws in leg kicks, he's capable of, he can, yeah, make Stipe's next 25 minutes be miserable. So, who knows? But I'm only gone.
He's had a long time to prepare for this, too. I think his last fight was in... so maybe summertime last year. So he's had a decent time to prepare for it. What kind of odds are we looking at for first round KO of Ngannou?
So I bet four on ACR. They have like dynamic pricing, so it went down to 3.7. There's probably going to be some bookies offers like like, for example, PokerStars. Let's have a look at them. They are they will offer price on so for him just to win in round one, they are offering, where can I find that? Okay, so they're only offering three, but they will have like request odds. So for example, Ngannou by KO, I see that's only 3.5, so that's not too appealing. But I mean, at least for him to win by KO in round one is much better than him just winning in round one. But I think you're going to be able to get like 3.7 some places.
Ngannou for the win.
Ngannou, yeah.
All right. Well, I can see on Bet365 you can get 3.6 for Ngannou to win in round one. Would you take those kind of odds, boys?
I obviously much rather have four, but I think 3.6 is probably an okay bet. But you can, if you look around, you're probably going to find a bit higher. And if you just look for a KO in round one, I can look at one more side just to see. You'll probably be able to get closer to four, I think.
Yeah, if you put that on Betfair, I imagine you get close to that.
Yeah.
All right, awesome stuff, fellas. Let's quickly summarize everything we've talked about today with our best bets of the weekend. Jonas, mate, why don't you go first this time, mate?
Going for my man Ngannou first round.
All right, love it. Ryan?
I'll go for the French-Canadian, Marc-André Barriot.
All right, nice.
Oh,
mate, why'd you ask, mate? You know my best bet of the weekend record.
Yeah, I'm going to put up and lay it on Betfair.
I was going to go with, I thought Stipe's odds were a bit big, but you guys have talked me out of it. So why don't we go with a little speculator? We'll go Woodley first round KO. It's a speculator, but I think you can get 12. I saw yesterday you get 12s at Paddy Power. So why don't we just throw that in? So if it loses, I don't look like an absolute idiot.
I'm sure that's going to come in because apparently he's been training with Ben Askren, hasn't he, for this upcoming boxing fight. So he's going to be in his corner. So his hands are going to be looking sharp. And you know it's going to happen, don't you? He's getting up Ben Askren elite striking time.
You know we're previewing that fight.
I don't mind.
Oh, fuck. That's going to be honestly, I'm watching that fight. I know it's disgusting, but I'm watching that fight. You have to watch it.
I think Frank Mir's on the undercard, isn't he?
What?
He's fighting Antonio Tava in a boxing match.
Oh, my God. What is happening in this world? Is Tyson on the card too?
I don't think so, but there might be some others.
Oh, Jesus Christ. CM Punk, get them all on there. All right. You can follow these gentlemen on Twitter at SM Sports Trader for Ryan and at Jonas Yell for Jonas. Check out smartsportstrader.com too. Lots of good stuff on there from Ryan. UFC quiz question to finish up, fellas. What is the combined fight time for Francis Ngannou's last four fights? Jonas has probably cheated already, but is it an average or is it close to 1.5 minutes? 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes, or 3 minutes? Who wants to go first?
2 minutes.
2 minutes? Ryan?
Was the 2.5? Did you say 2.5? Yeah.
2.5 is an option, mate, yes.
Yeah, I'll go for that, yeah.
Ah, well done, Ryan, mate. You cheated in everything, Jonas, and you still lost.
20 seconds plus 20.
Oh. I think it's the JDS fight was the long one. I think it went for like 115 or something like that. So, super long fight. I think it's 232 was the number. Wow. So combined fight time, last four fights, absolutely extraordinary. Next podcast coming up for everyone. Let me just have a quick think. I can't really think of
Mark O'Hare, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it's not really a podcast.
I'll do your job, Alex. It's all right.
Yeah, thanks, mate. It's not really a podcast, though. It's more of a Sunday streams, mate. Come on, you know the famous.
It's different, isn't it?
So, yeah, that's the most exciting thing coming up, isn't it? So Sunday night, tune in and ask Mark O'Hare whatever you want to ask him. He's just coming off winning about 20,000 awards for the SBC Awards. So he's a very, very popular man, let's say that. And shout out to the SBC Awards. It was great. I think we came last in every category, but, I mean, it's whatever. Who cares? I mean,
I voted for it, yeah. So there you go. You see, yeah. Must have jinxed you.
Yeah, I think our video channel came fifth or something like that. And then the podcast. I mean, the podcast got 6% of votes. So you know what? That's I think that's extreme. If you look at that, out of the whole betting population, 6% think we're the best podcast. And if you look at it that way, like, that's extraordinary. Okay, I'll be quiet. Okay, here's the best way you can look at it. We are the fifth best betting video channel in the world. There you go. You take that, Jonah, and that's all thanks to Jonah. So
yeah, I would say it's all thanks to you.
Nah, mate, it's all you, mate. I mean, none of my videos have got 200,000 views. So maybe one day, though. Maybe one day. All right,
one day.
Let's wrap it up. Thanks for listening, everyone. Like, subscribe, review, do all that fun stuff, and we will catch you very soon. Thank you, guys.
See you later.